We have Justin Passaportis is joining us today, Siddharth Pamawasan and Adrian Rees. But first, let me introduce to you Justin. He's GoGet Carshares General Manager for Victoria and South Australia. Now, since his appointment 2 years ago, the size of both the fleet and the membership base of GoGet across Melbourne and Adelaide has more than doubled to almost 500 vehicles and at least 15,000 members. Have you at the very least seen the little parking signs in and around the city or near your neighbourhood saying reserved for GoGet? Have you looked at it and thought, how does that work? Have you gone past the sign and thought, that's always vacant, that's always empty, which means, logically, that the car is always being rented. That's got to be the basis of a decent business. His work with local government, developers and businesses has helped establish Carshares Place as an integral part of the private-public transport landscape. And I can tell you from the many transport and infrastructure forums that I've been a part of, car sharing is now considered by all levels of government a key plank or even pillar of a public-private transport policy. He was born and raised in Zimbabwe. He holds an MBA. Please welcome Justin Passaportis.
Well, thanks very much to the Institute for having me. I must say I'm flattered to be introduced by Virginia. But please, Virginia, at question time, bear in mind I'm not a politician, so go easy on me.
No.
When I sat down to prepare my presentation, I tried to work in a lot about risk and insurance and anticipate how it might be perceived by an actuary, but I quickly found myself going around in circles. I soon resolved to not veering too far away from car share, which of course is what I know, but I do hope I manage to present information which is relevant and useful to you. This is my first car. A Mazda 323, bought secondhand. I think it was a 1989 model. It definitely did the rounds. All three brothers learned to drive in the 323, and it certainly took a few knocks, some of which mum and dad heard about, most they didn't. But growing up in Zimbabwe, it was never stolen outright, but I can remember it was stripped bare on at least a couple of different occasions. More than anything, having a car meant independence to me and a coming of age, as I'm sure it did for many people here. I know it was the very day that I turned 16 that I sat my learner's test. I couldn't get out on the road soon enough. Well, that was half a lifetime ago, but how things are changing now. And that's where car share comes in. Here's the inevitable first question. Has everyone heard of car share? A show of hands? I'm seriously impressed. Is anyone a member of the service? Fewer. Well, I haven't owned a car since the one you saw on the last slide. Luckily, though, I've had access to four wheels whenever I've needed them. Today, I commute on my bicycle to and from the city. I'm lucky enough to live by the train station and the tram line, so public transport also helps me get around. But it's just every so often, if I'm picking the folks up from the airport or I'm lugging furniture around, that I need four wheels, and that's when I use car share. So I don't own a car, but I just pay to use one every now and again. And that's the short of it, a membership-based service that you sign up for. Cars can be booked by the hour or by the day. Carshare is self-service. Your membership card, which looks like this, think of it as your MyKey, that you use the card to access our fleet of vehicles. Again, it's very much your key to our service. It's used to lock and unlock the doors, and the key itself is tethered to the ignition inside the car. Along with a fuel card, which you use to top up. You might be surprised to learn that car share has in fact been around for decades, with one of the first sizable operations having started in Europe in the 60s. It has its roots in solving the challenge of the idle personal car, the one that sits in a car park for 23 hours of the day, costing money, But then it emerged that it can just as well be a solution for business travel too. My wife is a consultant. She just finished up a 3-month-long project with a client in Port Melbourne. Using CarShare on her corporate account, she could pick up cars either close to home or close to the office and have the flexibility to come and go from the site as she needed to and not have to worry about fumbling around for her credit card and, you know, remembering to reconcile expenses when she was back at the office. Interestingly, it probably saved her company about half the cost of the equivalent round trips in taxis. On a global scale, Zipcar is the world's largest car share provider, and they were bought out by Avis for $500 million in 2012. That's a noteworthy development because the established car rental companies are recognizing where car sharing is going, and they're staying abreast of this development. It's telling that they're acquiring smaller car share companies. Zipcar has about a million members worldwide. Hertz and Europcar, other large established car rental companies, also have car share brands of their own that they've either acquired or launched of their own accord. Car sharing is enabled by technology. The idea of sharing, of course, has been around for ages. You know, carpooling and holiday homes are just a couple of examples. Technology has just allowed us to do it at an economy of scale and in an efficient way. Fleetcutter is the technology arm of GoGet and our sister company. It has developed the full front and back end systems. The gold box that you see pictured is the onboard computer that we install into every vehicle, and which allows us to track things like kilometers and pinpoint GPS. We even have remote access to the vehicle, so can do things like sound the horn if a member is looking for a car. I think it's been critical that development happens in-house, as this has allowed for custom design and real-time updates, but more importantly than anything, innovation. Our latest service, termed OneView, means that we install our technology into an organization's pool cars and then upload them onto the system. So as a staff member logging in, you can see the pool cars sitting alongside the share cars on a single platform. It's literally a one-stop shop for your transport needs. The advent of the smartphone means that you can book cars directly from our app. And this is what the interface looks like. The map shows where we are right now in relation to the closest cars. You can see from the pin on the map that we actually have a pod, a couple of vehicles, in this very building downstairs. So if we wanted to, we could book out that car, or one of those cars, be on the road on our way to the next meeting in a matter of minutes. From another technology aspect, the data that we have available is vast, and we can use it to plan the network. The top map here is our network of cars in 2010. The bottom map is the same map, obviously, but now in 2015, with an overlay of where our members are based, shown by the blue dots. It underscores the growth of the service, but it also shows the power of data, because we can see where the demand is coming from and where our members are signing up. So we can literally take our new pods to our members. It's an incredibly powerful tool. This is what membership growth has looked like in Melbourne over the last few years. I couldn't resist including this in the deck. The lights represent members. You can see how it lights up in 2013, and then bursts again in 2014 after a couple of key strategic initiatives. You really get a sense for the trajectory that CarShare is on. And let's delve for a moment into those lights. Here's a makeup of our membership base, taken from the 2014 annual survey. An interesting cross-section of the population, educated, relatively young, high users of public transport, and maybe slightly more men than women. I'm pretty sure if you did a study on the likelihood of who might take up driverless technology first, you'd be looking at a very similar demographic to this. And just hold on to that thought for a second. Moving on to something of a cost-benefit analysis for CarShare. The model relies heavily on support from local government, who make parking bays available for car locations. These become transport nodes or extensions of the public transport network. Displayed is an infographic that the city of Port Phillip, a local council in Melbourne, drew up just last month to put out to the community as it reviews its car share policy. It's a little bit busy, but hopefully I'm unpacking some of the things that it touches on throughout the presentation. Essentially, it's a snapshot of where car sharing is and what it's working to achieve. Bear in mind that this is a city council that did this of its own accord. I think the really telling statistic here is that for every dollar the council invests, car share returns $2.43 in benefits. This is really significant when considering whether, if anything, operators should be asked to pay for the use of the public space that they occupy. Car share pods are not unlike a bus stop or tram stop, delivering a clear benefit to the community. And we've been grappling with this very debate for the last couple of years in Australia as we try and find car share's place in this transport landscape. Elaborating on the benefits. The financial aspect is a big one, and people can actually save money by using car share over other forms of transport. Again, an idle car is one that's costing money. So what we try and do through car share is what we call sweat the asset and really make it work harder. Convenience is also a major factor, which is why we place pods as close as possible to where our members live and work. A single vehicle is shared by up to 30 members, often with a few different bookings on a given day. Here's another big statistic. Every shared car removes up to 10 others from the road. That's telling. And it really underscores the environmental benefits of car share. With lots of people tapping into this communal asset, other older vehicles are actually being retired. And this is all happening at a time of peak car, at the limits of our transport infrastructure. So you really start to get an idea that it's in how it's in council's best interest to support car share. And I hate to use the term, but talk about a win-win. It's good for the community. It uses existing transport infrastructure, and it's a sound business model. And these are just some of the city council's go-get works with to bring car share to local residents and businesses from Melbourne to Sydney and Adelaide. And just recently, in the last couple of weeks, Canberra launched its first on-street network. Some governments are not only creating good car share policy, but are further endorsing the model by signing up for the service themselves. A good example is Adelaide City Council, who signed up for the service late last year. We're now working with them to get a couple of bays immediately outside the town hall so that council staff can get around and about very easily. And it's happening internationally, as you can see from the insert at the top as well. Excitingly, the conversation has moved into the state government arena. The New South Wales government recently trialed car share over a three-month period, where at least 350 trips were made in car share vehicles. The trial was a success to the extent that in late August, it announced a new model to manage the state's car fleet, which will include car share, and get this, free up to around $1 billion worth in capital across 4 years. We're talking about an existing fleet of around 20,000 vehicles, so it's really mind-boggling numbers. But this is an exciting trend. These governments are leading by example and getting on the forefront of change. So this is what the transport might look like for a city-based business today. We call it intermodal transport. You might use a few different of these means on any given day. Historically, there's been pool or fleet cars and the taxis and obviously public transport. And now car share just sits alongside these as another option. It fills a gap that previously existed and gives people flexibility. This is a question that we put out to our members in last year's survey. There were about 1,500 responses, so a fairly good sample size. When asked about their last go-get trip, what mode of transport would they have taken if car share didn't exist? 35% said they'd have taken a taxi. Well, we've already seen that as a rule of thumb, car share works out to be about half the cost of a return trip in a taxi. The next highest response at just under 300 was personal car. This is what we refer to as grey fleet, or people using their own cars for business purposes. Now this gets interesting, as suddenly FBT comes into play, and there are questions about roadworthiness of the vehicles. You know, if Joe from marketing has a clapped out old car like mine from Zim, and is involved in a prank, is this a personal issue or a business one? It's certainly some delicate OH&S territory. Remember that traditional car share is not peer-to-peer. So the entire GoGet fleet, for example, is owned and administered by GoGet. So that certainly mitigates the OH&S risk for a company. Getting back to the question and our survey at large, certainly we're seeing responses change from year to year. And to stay on top of the game, we need to spot these trends and try to anticipate them. It's tremendously exciting. Let's look at a case study for a moment. A big engineering firm in the CBD signed up for car share. They had 25 pool cars originally and were spending over $10,000 in parking costs alone every month, which works out to about $400 per vehicle per month. Certainly not unusual for a city-based business. We mapped their total hours booked last year, and it looked something like that. Demand clearly fluctuating throughout the year as they worked on various projects. And probably a bit of seasonality in there too. With the car share model, there weren't the fixed costs that they'd need to pay regardless of how much a car was being used. They could use GoGet to help meet their peak fleet needs at times when their own pool cars were oversubscribed. And then the next month, if they weren't using car share, they weren't paying for the service. Today, their usage of car share is about a third the cost of what they originally paid for parking alone. And this isn't a standalone case. You're seeing architecture and design studios, consultants, businesses from across all sectors doing the same. Another great example of car share integration and a kind of hybrid approach to a fleet is our recent partnership with La Trobe University, launched just in February. We placed pure car share vehicles at its Melbourne campus, which are shared by faculty, students, and the wider community. But at the same time, their tools of trade vehicles and ones at remote campuses that we couldn't as easily accommodate, we installed our technology into their pool cars. It's the OneView model I spoke of earlier. So as a staff member, I can log in and see the share cars and the pool cars alongside each other on one platform. And by doing this, the university was able to reduce its pool fleet by up to 30%. Looking to the future now, and it's significant to note that the City of Melbourne is targeting 30% of households using car share by 2021. According to the Sydney Morning Herald just yesterday, 15% of all licensed drivers in the City of Sydney are already registered members of a car share scheme. We can't let the Sydney-siders take it over us, Melbourne. But we believe that car share is integral to the transition to driverless vehicles. We've seen how the membership base of almost 80,000 people consists of those willing to make the critical change from ownership to access. That's vehicles as mobility plugged into the transport network. Car share stands to be the perfect testing ground for autonomous cars. And this presents an entirely new set of challenges, as you can imagine, in terms of risk and liability. Insurance pricing models will need to be more efficient and flexible. Perhaps there's real-time insurance where rates depend on driver's performance in the moment. Taken a step further, what's insured? Cars or just the people inside them? Or how about this for an ethical dilemma? Designers will have to program vehicles to make decisions. If a crash is inevitable, should the driverless car veer to hit a pedestrian to save the life of the passenger? An incredibly complicated new environment, and for sure, a big opportunity for actuaries. Today on the driverless car front, we've partnered with the University of New South Wales, and have actually loaned them a car for self-driving research. The project is moving from data collection to tech installation, so it's a really interesting space to be in. You feel that there's almost a snowball effect, and as it carries on, it'll happen more and more quickly. And that brings us back to the humble automobile. This was the first car I ever had, and it may very well be the last. It occurred to me just a couple of weeks ago, sitting in a conference listening to the latest developments in driverless technology, that not only will my two-month-old daughter not own a car, but she will most likely not even get a driver's license. And for me, that's an incredibly exciting prospect. The idea of change can be daunting, but I'm reminded that if you don't embrace it, you will surely be left behind. Thank you.